Welcome, Chris Moyes, to Radio Regent News and Views. How are you today?
I am very well. I'm pleased to be here with you today.
Now, you were the school board trustee for Toronto Centre, am I correct?
That's correct. I'm the school board trustee for Toronto Centre and University of Rosedale. I oversee 34 public schools in the ward and since 2016. So I feel privileged to be the school trustee for our community.
That's very interesting. So in your purview, there are a number of communities that we might call marginalized, racialized, communities that are underserved using the, shall we say, government definition. What kind of issues do you deal with on a day-to-day level based on what's going on in marginalized communities with relation to schooling? I know that's a very big question, but can you just speak to that?
Well, our community, our ward is actually very diverse. You know, you have Rosedale, you have the Annex.
Right.
We also have Yorkville area. But we also have, you know, the Regent Park community, the St. Jameson community, the Esplanade community. And those communities that I referred to as marginalized, right? Very dense populations, a lot of minorities living in those communities. And they don't have a living wage. You know, a lot of these families have, you know, three jobs just to sustain their households. So as a school board trustee, you know, we do our best as a system to provide more resources to those community schools like St. Jamestown, Nelson Mandela, Lord Dufferin, Spruce Court, to name a few, Winchester. And so we know that those kids need additional support. So we actually provide more resources, or try to provide more resources to those community schools so that they have, you know, looking at this in an equity lens. So that these kids, you know, will come out of poverty, you know, and provide, get a great education, right, as anybody else in a more affluent area. And so they have a chance to succeed, right? Because we know that, you know, poverty is generational. If we don't break the cycle, it will continue. So, so I think, you know, for me as a trustee, as a man of color, as a black man, you know, represent this community, who myself have come from a marginalized background. My parents were immigrants, you know, working in factories throughout their entire lives. I know how hard it is to raise oneself out of poverty. So I feel that, you know, when our children succeed, our young people succeed, we succeed as a society. So, so yeah, and that's been my focus for the last almost 5 years as a trustee. I want to say to you, one of my greatest accomplishments as a trustee is actually bringing a motion forth back in 2017 to a review of uniformed officers in our high schools. Mm. And based on our review, a system-wide review, you know, making sure we have provided safe spaces for those who want to tell their experiences, you know, teachers, parents, students, and overwhelmingly, you know, we also wanted to focus on the voices we don't normally hear from, for example, right? Because if you just ask everybody, then, you know, the majority who are Caucasian, you know, fluent will say, well, you know, we love policing in our school.
Right.
And based on our review, you know, overwhelmingly marginalized black kids, boys in particular, were being mistreated by the police in their schools. There was a higher expulsion rate, suspension rate in our schools as a result of all that. And we felt that, you know, school was not a safe space for everybody, and school should be a safe space for everybody. And so we decided after a review that, you know, we would ask police officers to do not return to our high schools. So that was just one example of my work at the school board as a man of color and looking at things in the equity lens, right?
Right.
And, you know, despite all the fear-mongering about, you know, oh, you know, crime will be increased, kids will get murdered, so on and so forth in our high schools, you know, and, you know, this is going to be on my conscience. I got to say to you, you know, 2 years out or 3 years out now since we've had officers out of our high schools, we've had no such incidents. All right. If anything, suspension and expulsion rates are actually way down now.
That's amazing.
And we have, yes, and we have more kids succeeding in our schools. You know, we have caring adults in our schools, be social workers, you know, hall monitors, you know, and so forth, who are experienced in working with young people to help them, you know, be successful, you know, contributing members of our society. So the work I do, I feel, at the board is very important, especially for as one a very few school trustee of a man of color. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, representation does matter. If you don't have people like me asking certain questions at the board table, and for that matter, any area in government, be it or private entity, be it the city or, you know, provincial government, federal government, if you don't have true representation, then, you know, certain things, topics would not be brought forth, right? You know, like anti-black racism and those sort of things, right? I mean, like, it was only when I became a trustee, we started talking about that. Mm-hmm. It was uncomfortable to talk about those things. But you know what? It became common language at the board table over time. And now, you know, my colleagues use the language. And, you know, society, I'm not saying I'm the one who started out of society, but the point is, you know, it's now common language that we talk about anti-black racism, right? And, you know, once you actually name something and acknowledge that it exists, then you can actually take steps to actually rectify it, right? And I think, you know, we're in a good place now to for that to happen, mitigate that to happen. I got to say we have a long way to go on many fronts, but I think, you know, we're on the right path.
Wow, a lot of things come to mind by the fascinating description you just made of work you've been doing as a trustee. One thing that immediately comes to mind, you talk about it, it almost sounds like a microcosm for the idea of police defunding. When you talk about how police being taken out of high schools has actually enabled, for example, other trained professionals to help out kids in a way that's positive, and this has had all sorts of positive ramifications in terms of behavior, in terms of dropout rates and all that. Do you see it as possibly a way forward? Like, this is what happens when we redirect resources away from policing and into maybe other areas, and look how successful it is.
Well, let me start by saying that I do support in defunding the police. And I can say that to you in the first person, in the sense that, you know, prior to being a counselor at St. Michael's Hospital, I was actually a police officer for 2 years. And in the not in Toronto, but just outside in the GTHA. And I can tell you my experience over the last 2 years as a police officer was very traumatic. I experienced a great deal of racism from day one.
Wow.
And to a point where I actually had to get professional counseling for the first time, because going to work every day was just such a painful experience for me. And that was me being in the bubble of policing. And I also experienced, you know, firsthand seeing how people of color was treated by officers and the pressure that, you know, other young officers faced, you know, to follow the line of injustice, if you want to call it that. And so, you know, I had to make a very... I worked very hard to be a police officer. As you know, it's quite a long ordeal, you know, to actually get in. And I foolishly thought, you know, once I got in, you know, that, you know, then I would have made it, right? And made a difference when I got in. So, but then you know, my liberty, the true challenge was actually when I did get in. But anyways, the point is, police officers are not trained to be counselors and social workers, right? Their job is to enforce the law, right? You know, one of the things I was told many times when I was a police officer was that I was not hired to be the local counselor. I was hired to, you know, press charges and write tickets. Let others be the judge and the crown deal with all the other social ills that comes with it. So that stayed with me throughout the years. And to now in 2020 to say that, you know, we should fund police and allow them to be, you know, social workers and have them in our high schools and so forth. And that's not the function of a police officer. Mm-hmm. They're not trained, you know, at police college. And quite frankly, one of the issues that we had, like I mentioned, in regards to our uniformed officers, was that they used to actually stop black kids in the hallways, take their names down and the description and any issues they may have with them at the time in the school, and then, you know, go back into the police station and put their name in the computer, which is now known as carding, right? So when they were stopped on the streets of Toronto, they had a profile already, right? And, you know, it was only after the fact that, our review, we learned about this. So, you know, I think, you know, right now the police service gets a lot of money for social work and community policing and all this other stuff. I think, you know, that money could be better utilized by actually putting it in agencies and that actually are experts in the field and, you know, fund them appropriately so that, you know, you will have less of issues that we're having now. You know, one of the things that irked me 2 years ago was that, okay, I know I'm all over the place here, but
go ahead.
One of the issues that irked me 2 years ago was that the police service decided to actually not take on crossing guards anymore, for example, right? That used to be part of their budget to actually hire and to make sure that, you know, school communities, all the crossing guards, you see many seniors and marginalized people holding up the stop signs to so kids can sit across the schools. The police service arbitrarily decided that they were no longer wanting to do that anymore. So the city then had to hire a third party to do that work. What I have issue with is that the police arbitrarily decided not to do this anymore, but they kept the budget that service provided. So they arbitrarily give themselves a raise, right? And the city councilors, you know, and city managers, you know, they did nothing about this. So, you know, it's those sort of things that really irks me. So, again, like, I don't know why we need to provide so much resources to the police service, you know, when we could do so much better, right? We can do so much better. And I keep pushing and fighting for these changes. In my own way, working with other community agencies, you know, my city council counterparts and others, right? And I think, you know, we are at a juncture in time where, you know, I think it is possible if there's a will, because I think society in general is there, but the politicians really need to step up and be brave enough to do it. That's a long-winded answer. My apologies.
No, that's good. That was a very rich, really illuminating answer. Also related to the first, some of the first statements you made, I was thinking you mentioned that one of the things that you really focus on, partly because of your own background, your own experience of being marginalized, is what you called it was the redistribution or the redirection of resources in marginalized communities. You said that's one of your aims. For example, in Regent Park, which is part of your area, What does that mean?
I call it equity, right? So not all things are equal. I mean, like, I don't want to name any one school in my ward, but I would just say that, you know, for example, kids in some schools, let's say in the Annex area or Rosedale area, without naming any schools, you know, parents, you know, have they have financial resources, right? You know, they have good jobs, they have good homes, they can provide tutoring for their kids. You know, some of them even have nannies that pick them up from school and drop them home, and so, you know,
music lessons is another thing they can afford.
Yeah, music lessons, right?
Yeah.
Guitar lessons, like karate, like all those things, right? And all those things are important. I mean, I'm not saying that I have any ill will towards those who have that. I think that the thing about equity is that, you know, we should all aspire to be that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not taking away, but giving to those who have less than we do. And, you know, at the end of the day, it makes us a better society, a better system. So, you know, we have, you know, almost 600 schools at the TDSB, right? And the largest school board in the country, you know. And we know where and one of the things we do really good at the TDSB is actually collect data. We have data on everything. and we know where the kids who need the extra help are located in our city, right? And we know what it is that they need. And so, for example, like, you know, some kids, you know, the only meal they have is the one they get at school, right? So this is why it's important to provide have a meal program, a breakfast and a lunch program for kids, so that you know that, you know, if they have a good breakfast, then they're able to learn better, right? We know that, you know, some kids in some areas see more violence than other areas. So, you know, we need to provide more social work support for them, more, you know, mentorship type things, right? Mm-hmm. And also, another thing, too, is community use of schools. We know that, you know, kids cannot, if we don't provide the programs for kids after school, they won't have anything. So we actually would waive the fees in certain schools so that the kids can utilize the space, or the community can utilize the space to provide programming for kids. So, you know, and that helps. I'll give an example that, you know, back in, you know, in when we had the 650 Parliament fire, I think it was 2 years ago now, you know, the entire building was displaced. And one of the things the city did was that they actually put people up in their community centers, you know, right in Legion Park. They ended all the programs and put the kids in put the people in the gyms to sleep. Same thing happens in St. Jamestown over at Wellesley and Sherburn. They put people in the gym for, you know, weeks at a time. And one of our students who used to play at basketball in the school, in the community center every day at 5 o'clock, you know, that was no longer available to him. And as a result of that, he ended up being in different spaces every evening at that time. And then in the day, you know, you may have heard of this, he got shot in front of his home in the Regent Park area, right?
I did, yes, yes.
Yeah, and shortly after, I think days after, the city then put everybody in the hotels, right? When, you know, we were asking for that initially. So it's unfortunate that tragedy, you know, had to happen for the city to actually act, right? But the point being that, you know, we need to provide safe spaces for kids, right? Otherwise, you know, this sort of thing will happen. It's not new. It's not unique. We know. We've seen the data. Right? This is why, you know, we the school board, and in partnership with the city, make sure that, you know, these spaces are available to young people.
So this is an example of redirecting resources in the name of equity to
this area. So again, you know, I see the value in that. Unfortunately, I can't say that this provincial government has been equal partners in that. I mean, we actually have received $3 million for communities of schools under the Wynn government. And when the Ford government came into power, they actually took that funding away. And they also reduced our budget last year by $68 million. So we could not continue that program, even though, like, we pleaded and begged them. I was vice chair at the time, so I actually had regular meetings with the Minister of Education. And we sent multiple letters. We had one-on-one meetings with them. I mean, but they just would not budge on it. And as a result, now, you know, we could not provide after-school program for the kids in those, not only in my ward, but across the city, right? Yeah. Areas that are marginalized. So, you know, but then COVID happened. So, but it's just, it's a recipe for disaster. And again, you know, with COVID, we see the cracks in the system, right? We can see where the, and I know I've pivoted to another subject.
No, I was about to pivot there. Well done.
So, you know, we see the cracks in the system when it comes to COVID. We know that, you know, again, people in marginalized communities have a higher infection rate because of, you know, the work that they do and where they live, you know, and you know, we as a city have failed. We as a province have failed our communities. And, you know, I think, you know, hopefully this will be an eye-opener for some in power to actually make the change that is needed, not just, you know, a band-aid solution change, but, you know, a permanent change. Right, we are crossroad, and we can do better as a society. We live in one of the richest countries in the world, right? You know, and you know, people should not fall through the cracks as we have been, you know, as we have been doing. Another big issue is you know, the homelessness in the city, right? As I mentioned, you know, I worked for many years as a mental health counselor at a hospital, and we know that addiction and mental health is a big problem in this city, right? For various reasons, right? We have failed those communities, right? You know, the first thing, addiction should be decriminalized because it is an illness, right? People should not be, you know, imprisoned or charged because, you know, they have an addiction issue, right? Other countries have done it, you know, and I think, you know, we as a country really should do the same thing. And people need support. I mean, so many people are on the brink of, you know, being homeless. And we see it now more so than ever before in our city. You know, I have a small dog, you know, and I walk in the park, you know, 3-4 times a day. And the amount of tents that has gone up, you know, it's just heartbreaking to see it. And I know that as a healthcare worker, you know, I know for some, you know, they think like, you know, this is not really a huge cost to us as a society, but it's a huge cost. Because I can tell you, like, over the summer when it's really hot, the fire and ambulance came to the park here several times a day because people were not well because of heat stroke, right? And so there's a cost to healthcare. There's a cost to criminal system. You know, it's just society, right? Mm. You know, so if we actually just did the right thing by providing supportive housing to people, for people, not just housing, but people need supportive housing because there's a distinct difference. You know, you need a worker in the place to make sure that, you know, people get their regular medication, right? You know, because a lot of people that are homeless have mental health issues, so they need their regular medication. They need regular reminders to have their meals, right? You know, and I think, you know, if we actually did that, you find that, you know, we live in a better, safer place. And I think we'd all benefit, because even the crime rate has gone up in the city since COVID, you know, because people are desperate, yeah. Right? You know, our parks are now used as a toilet. Yeah. And I asked, you know, and I said to the council, like, you know, why don't you put potter bodies out there in the parks? You know, they're there, and, you know, I mean, they have to go. She goes, well, the city said that, you know, they don't have the staffing to actually clean the potter bodies. Well, that makes no sense to me, because they're going to go anyway. So, I mean, like, if you don't have the staff to clean the potter bodies, get the other staff to clean the potter bodies, right? Otherwise, the park is a mess and none of us could use it.
Yeah.
So, it's those sort of things that drive me crazy, but the city is so far behind when it comes to so many things, and I have to say, you know, I probably should not say this publicly, but, you know, I've lost a little bit of faith in it going forward as to whether the country mitigates some of these things that are happening, and with a second wave coming, you know, we know it will come. You know what? That's how we take in this first phase to mitigate, you know, what can and may happen in the second phase. So, I don't know.
It's interesting that you talk about the second wave, and also I think what I'm discerning is that maybe you think that the City of Toronto has been reactive rather than proactive in the way it's dealt with COVID and other issues. You know, not having a plan that makes sense looking forward. What do you tell parents? You know, I'm a parent, and I have concerns about my youngest child, who's now gone back to school. What are you telling parents moving forward with COVID, especially, and we're getting back now to people in marginalized communities who really are desperate for the childcare that school provides? What do you see, in the coming months, in terms of COVID? Do you think the schools are going to be shut down again? Do you think it makes sense for large numbers of kids to be in buildings together? What do you see moving forward?
Well, one of the things that I got to say first, though, that, you know, our staff at TSB is incredible. They have worked throughout the summer, you know, to make sure that, you know, there's a safe return to school. And about 77,000 of our students have decided to do the remote learning, right? That's SK to grade 12. So, you know, it's really, that's the size of a school board outside of Toronto, right? 77,000 kids. So we've had to and I think we have like 700 teachers right now doing the remote learning, and we have VPs and principals and superintendents for both elementary and secondary virtual. So it's been a huge undertaking, and I have complete faith in our staff. And from the very outset, you know, we've said to the province, along with, you know, our federation partners and others, that, you know, really, you know, we should really bring the class sizes to 15. The province, you know, have said no. You know, again, I think for them it's a monetary issue. They've dug their heels in, and, you know, we've done the best we can. We've actually, in some instances, we talked about, you and I talked about earlier, about the kids in high-risk communities. One of the things that TDSB has done is that we've actually used 2% of our reserve funds to bring down the class size in those high-risk areas. And in my ward of Toronto Centre, University of Rosedale, Rose Avenue and Lord Dufferin, which were the schools that were identified as high-risk. And so, you know, the class size in those schools are 15, and 20, depending on the grade that your child is in. I would hope that, you know, would have more schools in my ward that were identified as such. Again, you know, we don't have unlimited resources, so we couldn't do as many. But I think, you know, we actually identified 93 schools at the TDSB that were high risk and put extra funds in those areas. But that being said, we, recognizing that there may be a second wave, I think, you know, it would be easier for us to pivot into remote learning system-wide if that were to happen. And I think when that is going to happen.
Yeah.
But if that happened, I think we're in a good position to pivot to remote. Right now, our secondary students, you know, they do half day in class and half day remote. So if we were to pivot to remote, I think, you know, it'd be a seamless transition. I think, you know, for elementary, yeah, it could be seamless also. I think because, again, you know, we have so many kids that are already remote. We know how that's working. And for those that are in class, if they would go to remote, they already have their homeroom teacher in place. So really, you just continue the curriculum in a remote setting. The difference between now and back in March is that, you know, back in March, you know, we were actually still on March break. I mean, when we went back, when we were finally allowed to go back to the classroom, you know, kids had, you know, like fruit and sandwiches and stuff in their desk still. You know, teachers, you know, had all their resources in the school because they thought after a week they'd be coming back into the classroom. So we were really caught off guard because it happened so rapidly, you know, that back in March, that we had nothing. So so it was a bit of a scramble initially for us, you know. But we've learned a lot from, you know, since then to now. And I think if we were to go remote fully, you know, we'd be better equipped now to do so. So I'm not too worried about that. I mean, like, one of the reasons why we actually felt it important that kids come back into the classroom is because, you know, their mental health. You know, kids need to be socialized. They need to be around, you know, other people, you know. And we know how difficult that is for a lot of people, especially secondary students, right? Based on our student survey 2 years ago, we know that a lot of high school kids, you know, their mental health is not the best, right? Because of all the pressures, societal pressures, based on social media and other things, you know, wanting to get into a good university and the competition and everything else. We know that, you know, they are not in a good space mentally, and that they need more support in their daily lives and school work. And so we knew that it's in children's best interest they come back to the classroom. And also too, I lost my train of thought. My apologies.
No, it's fine. We're talking about moving forward in terms of COVID and in terms of what we're going to tell parents. I like hearing that you're so confident about the staff at the TDSB, and that this time there's so much more preparation and so much more thought has been put into how to run education in schools than, for example, in March when it happened. And mm-hmm. that's great to hear, and fills me with enormous confidence that you're being very positive about it, which I think is great.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, I think we're in a good place. I think, you know, I think, and kids are resilient, right? So
yes.
You need a lot of encouragement. And yeah, the last point I wanted to make too was, it went back to my original point about kids, you know, school is a safe space for children, be it, you know, elementary or high school. And there's a lot of abuse that takes place in the household. You know, we know that, right? And, you know, the safe haven for a lot of children is school. And as I mentioned earlier too, you know, some kids don't eat, you know, don't have breakfast or lunch unless they come to school. So we as a system is very much aware of that. And this is why, you know, we felt it important that, you know, we get children back into the classroom. So, I mean, you probably heard about the kids' helpline, how much they've been inundated with calls now. They've had to triple their staffing because kids are on the brink. So we know that. I mean, again, like I mentioned earlier, you know, the one thing we're good at the TDSB is having statistics. So we know how vulnerable kids are. We know where they're located. And we know, you know, some things we can do to mitigate that. And, you know, one of the best ways to do that is having them back in the classroom.
I hadn't thought of that aspect, that school is actually a safe haven for kids. That's a really important perspective.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I was just going to say that it's wonderful that this 20-minute interview has become a 40-minute interview. Thank you so much for giving so much of your time. Maybe if you make one last point, and then we'll wrap up.
No, that's about it. I mean, you know, we're all in this together, you know, and, you know, yes, we're all in this together. And even though we're all in together, we're not all in together, right? Again, it goes back to equity, right? But just know that we're doing the best we can at the school board. We're working hard to represent all of our students and our staff. And, you know, their safety and their well-being is a number one priority for us. And again, as your school board trustee, if you need to reach out to me, please feel to do so. You know, just go to the TDSB website, tdsb.on.ca, and you'll find me all over that website. So yes, be safe, and thank you for having me here today.
Chris Moyes, it's been great. Thanks so much.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.